Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now.
Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Nerds ruin everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
This will be the episode we did not think we were going to get to record. So.
Yeah, it has been a Herculean task, to say the least. It has been a hell of a week for me. It's mostly on my part, just because I usually work from home, just for a little behind the scenes stuff for you guys. But I was in corporate all week, and there was a lot to do, and there was a lot of time spent at corporate, and that makes recording, I mean, especially when you usually record on the weekends, almost impossible. We found some time, and so I really wanted to make this happen because Logan will explain to you why we were probably not going to be able to. I know we're not going to be able to record next week.
Next week is my anniversary, or our anniversary, mine and Stephanie's, and we're going out of town to a place that I honestly don't think has real internet. So even if I wanted to take like an hour out of our anniversary weekend just to record and chit chat, I don't know that I'd be able to. So that's fun. But I mean, I've been there before. Mm-hmm. It's basically just like, it's Pine Mountain, Georgia.
Okay. I even know what Pine Mountain, Georgia is. Yeah. I have family that lives out in Georgia. So, you know, I know, I've never been there, but I know of the area. It's beautiful country.
It is really, really pretty. It's hopefully not going to be too cold, but you know, mm-hmm. I'll talk about all that the next weekend. Today we hoped to talk about Send Help, but you weren't able to see it.
Yeah,
I did get to see it very, very briefly. It's a lot of fun. It's nice to have him back in that world, you know, working in sort of like rated R. Yeah, very. It's a very Sam Raimi movie. And so if you like Sam Raimi, I imagine there's going to be a lot to like here. I think it's almost like seeing somebody who's stepped away from a sport they were excellent at come back after a few years. And it's like, they've still got it, but
it's the Jordan coming back to basketball.
Yeah, it might take a minute. So
yeah,
this is a good first movie back. It's fortunately short. Because it's very much a two-hander, and they are both excellent. I've been on a little bit of a kick with I just drew a blank on his name.
Dylan O'Brien.
I watched Twinless last week, which holy shit.
Yeah.
If you need something that's like horrifying without the horror, Twinless is that movie, but Dylan O'Brien is fucking excellent in it.
He's I did see that because it's on Hulu, and we'll have a conversation. I think that deserves a whole not mini conversation, but between a mini and a full conversation, it's like a mid conversation it deserves. I'm not ready to talk about it because quite frankly, it's I don't even know how you would be ready to talk about it, considering the subject matter.
It's also really disturbing. And
that's the thing that hit me so hard. Yeah, that's the thing that hit me so hard was how it is really fucked up. It's a fucked up movie, but it's I think what makes it really fucked up is how emotional at its core it is.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's one of those movies that you see, I was not expecting it to be like it hit me the way that it hit me. And I was like, I need some time to process this, to figure it out. I wasn't going to mention it until like I had time to maybe watch it again. I mean, I know that sounds weird. It's one of those
where I saw the trailer, mm-hmm. and I think I may have even mentioned it. Like, I think this is a movie I'm like thinking about going to see like by myself just because of the subject matter. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm glad I didn't, because the trailer you see is not the movie that you get.
No.
But yeah, so we unfortunately, you know, didn't send help as great. It lost the box office this week, which is wild. I actually wanted to get out to see Iron Lung because of that.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen because snow, ice. It's still like the winterest of winters here. So we, after Thursday, we're like, oh yeah, it's going to be that weekend again. So we haven't left the house since Thursday night.
I'm hoping this week to see both of them, to see Iron Lung and Send Help. I mean, we kind of talked about Iron Lung offline, like via text last week. And I was saying, have you heard about this fucking movie? That's like it was making like 10 million, like it would made 10 million in pre-sales. And I kind of did a deep dive on this guy's like YouTube page. And I mean, he's not the first guy to make a YouTube, like, you know, a YouTuber to make the leap to like a narrative film, but, or to a theatrical release. But from everything I've heard, it's a fairly auspicious debut feature that manages to be quite harrowing, but still manages to be like infinitely watchable from all accounts. And I'm genuinely curious for based off of a video game I have no clue about. I was like, okay, this is like a world that I have, like, YouTube is something that I kind of started dipping my foot into, partially because of like I watched the Mr. Beast interview that David Letterman did, and that intrigued me. And so I started, like, this year and last year, I started to dive into like the YouTuber circle, because so many people that I know, so that have kids, that like somebody like Mr. Beast is like literally their Steven Spielberg. And I'm like,
it's wild. It's wild to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my dad is even in that like sphere now, not maybe not with things that people would flock to, but
yeah,
he definitely has like that. There's one guy that he's constantly telling me about that I still don't know his name. He just goes and explores like abandoned amusement parks and towns, mm-hmm. and stuff. And my dad's fascinated by it. And I'm just like, it's much like TikTok. I'm like, I don't want to fall down that rabbit hole. Like, knocking what any of those people do.
Yeah.
It's just like, that will then become this other thing that I feel some kind of obligation towards. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I have TV, I have the cinema, like, I have my produced things, and I can't add to that.
No, it's weird because, like I said, and I'll leave it at this, like, the whole Mr. Beast, and then like going into not his crew necessarily, but like the people that are around that, I can see why people are so like go down that rabbit hole of YouTubers, because it's easily digestible and it's entertaining, but it's very non-narrative. It's kind of like what Jackass begat, like these YouTubers took to a different extreme. And it's not like people kicking each other in the balls or anything like that, though we are getting another Jackass movie, which I'm super excited about. Like, you know, quickest way to make a Gen Xer or a millennial like revert back to like teenagerdom, like us, like Beavis and Butthead, is just announce a Jackass movie. And the instant
start playing that theme song, and everybody's just like, wow.
Hey, it just makes you go, huh, 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 huh. Like, it just does. I mean, I don't like like the like it's just forever juvenile delinquent behavior is just, especially from these guys, is just funny. But also, you know, but also like, you know, Bam Margera, fuck you, dude. I just had to say that.
Him and Crispin Glover are two dudes paid not to be in movies.
Yep.
Like, it's wild. They're like, here's a check for $500,000. Please do not show up.
Yeah, please just leave. Please just do not exist in this space anymore. But yeah, no, it's very interesting, like the whole YouTubers. My little cousins are into like the TechCrunch stuff, and that's fascinating. Like, that's truly fascinating, and like watching like all of this like engineer, like, it gives me hope. Like, that's the one thing I will say at the end of it. Even the Mr. Beast stuff kind of gives me hope, because at the end of the day, yeah, he's doing it for clicks and fame and aura farming, as the kids say nowadays. But it's also, he's doing things that are like, he's giving water to like drought, like that, like in drought spots around the world. Like, he's like, have you heard about his candy company? His candy company giving living wages to people who other companies like Hershey's doesn't give a living wage to, because they feel like it's not economically feasible and they have to use child labor. I'm like, what? It's wild stuff. Like, it's just wild stuff. And I'm like,
it's one of those things where like, there's also, you read like the occasional problematic Mr. Beast thing.
Yes.
Where it's like, yeah, he's maybe not the best dude, but it's the kind of thing you want to point out and go like, hey, other billionaires, like, you can kind of be a creep if you were also giving back to society. Like, a lot of people might just look the other way.
Exactly. No, that's the thing, is that like, and then also like, oh, some of the stuff is for content hits. Like, this whole thing about the guy that they said, like, they have like, oh, he forced people into prisons for clicks. And I'm like, they're there. Yeah, they're like, they're kind of forced, but they're not, because they're each given money after, like, if they can stay for a certain amount of time, and they're not starved, they're given food, they're given entertainment. It's just a social experiment, right? And I'm like, okay, well, you know, he is kind of a dick, but at the same time, he's not paying these guys. There's right. some bastards out there that are just not paying them.
It's very much like a Henry Ford kind of thing, where it's yes. like, what a fucking asshole, but also, like, if he's paying people enough to actually survive and not, you know, sending children into the mine, it's that kind of thing.
Exactly. No, you're right.
But yeah, so long story short, a lot of stuff we didn't watch this week. But there's something, unfortunately, I haven't finished it. I didn't ask you, have you finished it?
Yeah, it was I finished it last night. I had two episodes left, so I finished it. I finished it last night when I got home. I got home pretty late, but it was like, it's the thing that I had looked forward to so much this week. And it's so it was so easily digestible in 30-minute increments.
Yeah.
That it was like, yeah, I gobbled it up.
So all of Wonder Man dropped on Disney Plus last week. We actually saved it because of the decision to stay indoors, and we were going to stream most of it Friday. And then I guess because of the ice storm, our internet was just like, nope. So we wound up watching Amazing Spider-Man, which Steph had never seen. And she spent the whole movie going like, what the fuck are they talking about? I'm like, yeah. That movie does not hold up, guys. And Andrew Garfield comes off as less like he's cool when he's doing the Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah.
But he's a total creep as creep. Peter Parker.
Such like a creep,
absolute
dude.
Absolute creep. Not Andrew Garfield's fault. Like, I'm sure a lot of it was choices. But, editing, you know, yeah. Anyway, so we've only managed to get through three of the 8 episodes of Wonder Man. So there won't be a ton of spoilers. Unfortunately, the internet has spoiled a lot of stuff for me, but that's all right. But this show is phenomenal in a way that I didn't think Marvel, even Good Day Marvel, could do. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, absolutely. Like having seen the whole thing, I can tell you without spoiling anything, it lands the ending. In a big way that I feel like most Marvel properties in the last, decade haven't landed. I mean, they always have had an ending problem. But I think that because this is Dustin Daniel Cretton before Shang-Chi, this really does feel so low level and low stakes, but not. So
can we talk about him for a minute?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to hijack the, because I do like the show, but since I haven't finished it, I'll probably have more to say next week.
Mm-hmm.
But he is the creative force behind this. And I think it's probably fair to say our first exposure to this dude was Short-Term 12.
Yes.
And he kind of went underground after that. Like, he really didn't do a lot.
No.
Like, the Glass Castle, I think, was maybe the one bigger thing that he did.
He did, like, it's... So, like, he wrote the movie The Shack, which is this, he also did Just Mercy. So, like, there's a very, like, I don't want to speak for him, but there is a large contingent of faith-based stuff that's within his, like, not faith-based, but being of service, because Short-Term 12 is about Halfway House. Yeah.
And if, like, you haven't seen it, find it.
Oh God. Yeah. Like if you didn't know, like that was the thing. And that's the thing that will always convince me Brie Larson is the shit, because I mean, Rami Malek, Lakeith Stanfield, Stephanie Beatrice, Caitlin Dever, John Gallagher Jr. These are all people before
anybody knew who the hell they were.
They were. And I will tell you, as my wife has said, as a person who's worked in halfway houses like that, says 100% accurate. Like, some of the emotional stuff, like what the counselors do in crossing emotional boundary lines, no, but the way that kids are and the way that things are handled in a lot of ways in the house is very accurate. Like, it's an amazing film, like a straight up amazing film.
See, just Mercy. Like, I didn't recognize the name, but looking at it, like, I remember the trailer now, mm-hmm. and I just never got around to watching it.
It's good.
He's such a phenomenal storyteller. Mm-hmm. I am gonna talk about something else that isn't Shang-Chi that he's also directed and produced, that's also on Disney Plus. Last week, I, not even in anticipation of this, I decided to finally watch American Born Chinese.
Okay.
This show is maybe one of the best things on Disney Plus. It deserved so much better than it got. The cast is absolutely incredible. And it definitely left the door open for a season 2. Sucks that we're not going to get it. But Ben Wong is going to be he should be a star. Like, I know he's still pretty young, but in that the Karate Kid did not do what we thought it was going to do. Mm-hmm. And also was not as good of a movie as we thought it would be. But this kid is so damn good. And I mean, we talked about him in The Long Walk and how great he was in that, but I mean, he's incredible in American Born Chinese. Like, anybody who hasn't seen it, absolutely seek it out, especially if like Crouching Tiger was kind of your thing back in the day. If you were into that, it's a must watch. But the way they're able to combine these like three weird stories in that show, because it's like this background story of this actor who very much in like a John Hughes and his racist Asian stereotype stuff, kind of became like a television star in that world and is now rethinking how terrible that was. And then you have the story of this kid who's like trying to fit in high school and his parents aren't really getting along, like a very family drama. And it doesn't do the thing where it does. You talked about the faith-based stuff. It does add this faith-based thing and also some stuff from like Chinese culture, or Taiwanese culture. And you're just, I guess, just Asian culture in general, because that's like one of those stereotypes about the family dynamic, right? But it doesn't do it in a stereotypical way, you know?
Like, yeah, no, absolutely.
You seen any of it?
I saw the first episode. I saw the thing that he directed. Now, I don't know whether that's the first two or the first episode. I cannot remember. To be quite honest, I think I saw it when it premiered in 2023 or 2024. And it's a blur because it wasn't released as the whole series. It was week to week. And I think that the first two episodes dropped at the same time. And it was directed by Cretton. So I think I watched the first two episodes. And I liked what I enjoyed. And I liked this. Like, Cretton has a very soft touch when it comes to these things. Like, you can see, like, I watched The Shack. And if you know about The Shack, the book, you know exactly what it's about. I'm not going to say anything more than that. But what I did appreciate is I felt his hand in there and just how soft of a touch he had with the faith-based stuff that's in there. It's not a take it or leave it thing. Like, Just Mercy is kind of similar in that way. It's not a take it or leave it. It is there, but it's such a, how can I put it? It's done with such a like, if you have any faith in your life, it's not something that you shove in people's faces. It's kind of like, at least the best people don't do that. You just live your life with it, right? And it comes up occasionally, but it's a natural conversation. You don't force it. I fucking hate when people force it. And
in American Born Chinese, like, his mom, that's one of the things, like, they immigrated here. His parents, he was born here.
Yeah.
And like, his mom fell into Christianity. His dad fell into his job. And they both are stuck in this rut. And one of the like really funny storylines that happens with his mom is she goes to this like herbalist, Asian herbalist, and finds out that like that it's an older lady. She's going to have to go out of business, like not making any money, blah, 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 blah. So she winds up taking all of the savings out of their savings account and buying all her product to sell it to her, Christian, like, ladies circle. Mm-hmm. And it becomes this whole thing, like, oh, it's these like white ladies buying like ancient Chinese secret thing. And it's stereotypical, but also funny because it's her like feeding into that to like try to build something for herself. And then of course, like there's the dad who has just kept his nose down at work, but never really been promoted, and he's stuck in a rut, and it's like all these little bitty storylines. And then you have the high school, very John Hughes-esque high school stuff going on. That's really, really interesting. But then you have this whole plot, like absolute, if it's not the A plot, it's definitely the B plot of like, there are these ancient gods and there's this fourth scroll and there's this like thing about like finding the fourth scroll, and one of the gods has a son, and the son thinks he knows where the fourth scroll is and comes down to Earth and brings this this mystical staff with him that belonged to his dad, and it gets stolen, and like it's very like grounded in that those like mystic things, you know, one's the bull god, one's the monkey king, all of that stuff that, you know, you've seen in any number of movies or stories or anything like that. And
yeah,
they just weave all of this stuff in and out of each other without really losing you, which is pretty incredible. All that to say, Marvel dropped the fucking ball because you chicken shits went back and said, oh, we got to get the Russos. We got to get Downey. We got to get the guy you should have handed everything over to, who should have been your new Russo brothers, your new like go-to guy. And I was kind of set up to be that way, was Destin Daniel Cretton. And you fucking chickened out because we have Shang-Chi, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. We have American Born Chinese is not Marvel. There's some references. There actually are a lot of references to DC stuff, and that kind of blew my mind. And then now we have his Wonder Man thing that he's directed some, but
yeah,
you know, producing has been his big responsibility with those two properties. And I mean, all three of these things are like beyond great. Shang-Chi, the problems with Shang-Chi are not the problems that all the other late stage Marvel stuff has.
No, absolutely not. It was, so I have a theory. And like, I think they're both chicken shits, and they're also trying. They were okay. So here's my thing: is I think that they know what they had in Wonder Man. They just don't have any faith in the audience.
Can you blame them? After no,
absolutely not.
What is this? Almost 5 years of. Almost 6 years of releasing things that are middling both in film and television.
Yeah.
Where it's like, even when it's good, it's still lacking something, a la like Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we're honest, I think that Fantastic Four, it has like, okay, Fantastic Four and every movie that's been released has had like, has had the problem of them reshooting and taking major stories out and not letting it be what the creators want them to be. Like, Shang-Chi is the last movie in the MCU where they let the director dictate what he wanted to make, which was a big budget Jackie Chan style or Jet Li style martial arts film. Martial arts fantasy film. And they did. I mean, think about it. They cast, it was Michelle Yeoh before everything, like it was before her Oscar win. Tony Leung, you were allowed to Awkwafina, like all of these like cat. All
you're
of this
not cat- wrong. I mean, you have Far From Home after Endgame.
Yeah,
I mean, they was right on top of Endgame. Like that was 2019 was a solid year for them. Black Widow gets delayed, dropped in 2021 to almost no acclaim, which is, it's not a bad movie. It's just like you made a prequel movie about a character that was dead and we weren't going to see again. But it did give us something. Like, we got something out of Black Widow because we got the Red Guardian and we got the White Widow or the new Black Widow or whatever you want to call her. And then Shang-Chi's in September of 2021. And then after that, you have Eternals, No Way Home, which also excellent. And it's almost by accident that No Way Home is excellent.
But also, like, the other thing is that it's not Marvel proper.
That's true.
Like, and
Marvel proper, you have Doctor Strange, Thor, Love and Thunder. Multiverse of Madness has its moments of greatness.
But it's hobbled by hiring on a director at the last minute.
Yeah.
Like, that movie is very different if Cargill if Derrickson directs that film, it's a completely different movie and probably a better off movie. It's the Marvel proper shit that, like, I mean, look at it. Every single one of them has had a problem with the director, the writing, the story, casting.
Black Panther. Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Yeah.
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is the one, like, with Spider-Man No Way Home that you can kind of point to. But it is, like, an almost by accident thing. Like, the Marvel suffers from, like, not being a badly directed movie. It suffers from, like Marvel themselves being like, wait, we don't want this. Let's reshoot half the fucking movie. Nia DaCosta wasn't even on set. So the rumors say. You get all that stuff. And then you have Deadpool and Wolverine. Again, not Marvel proper. I mean, it kind of is now, but that's good by accident kind of thing. They don't really have any... Like, it's not them that made the movie good. It's not a Marvel thing. Captain America Brave New World early last year. Thunderbolts is excellent.
Yeah, but excellent by mistake. Because everything we've heard was that they changed the ending. But by accident, again, that they let Jack Schaefer do what he wanted to do.
We're doing this like soft or hard reset, whatever it's going to wind up being. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. Just do whatever. And it's like, oh shit, this is a good movie. Fantastic Four, fine, but just not great. And then later this year, we're going to have Spider-Man Brand New Day, which fortunately is destined Daniel Cretton because they took his fucking Avengers movie away from him to give it to the Russo brothers.
Yep, because they were so scared. And also, like, going back to New Avengers, Thunderbolts. The thing is that had a whole bunch, like, it's a miracle that that movie actually survived, because that was supposed to be Harrison Ford's, like, they swapped him. That he was supposed to be in both that and Brave New World, but he wasn't. Why? Like, I'd love to know what the story was initially for the Thunderbolts, and why this like Julia Louis-Dreyfus was not supposed to be in it. It was supposed to be Steve Yeun, and all of a sudden, like, creative differences came up, and he won't talk about it. Like, you know, Steve Yeun won't talk about it. He just kind of, like, gives the pat answers. And I mean, it worked out, right? Lewis Pullman, Jesus Christ, thank God Lewis Pullman got cast, yeah, right?
I can see both of them in that role.
Mm-hmm.
But
there were probably completely different movies.
Yeah.
They were completely
Pullman has the like loser slacker thing.
He has the like his version feels like Lebowski. Yoon's version probably feels more like his character from Mickey 17, which is a much more like shifty operator that probably knew he was Century but played the game because he was like there's a version of Thunderbolts that is not the thing that we like. I could see it because if you cast Harrison Ford, it is a complete if Thunderbolt Ross is a part of that the Thunderbolts because it's like they're called the Thunderbolts for a fucking reason. Like it's not like that's the thing that I always find wild is that we just accept we do the accepted thing because the movie is so fucking good and it has that tone, it has that attitude, but there's another world where everything they do we reject and it doesn't fucking work, and it is like it's not even a big hit. Like it wasn't a big hit, it was more of a critical thing. It was more of a like, oh, this is actually good. But then it was followed up by another shitty, like, oh, let's go ahead and take 30 minutes out of this fucking movie because we're scared. Yeah. Like literally, like, I still go, what the fuck?
It's the one Marvel movie in a long, long time that I'm like, we could have spent a lot more time in the world of the Fantastic Four.
Yes, exactly.
It would have enhanced that movie. Like, I love Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah.
I don't even know, like, I would not be like, add 30 minutes to that movie just with more fun stuff. Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. Like, I don't think so. But you could add 30 minutes to Fantastic Four, like to better establish that world, but the problem winds up being that you're serving us this thing while also telling us it's going to be ultimately inconsequential. We just need to know who the characters are. Well, we've got three movies. We kind of know who the characters are. It's not, you could have made a, in the style of Spider-Man, what's the animated show called?
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. You could have done a Fantastic Four First Steps style animated show, given us 8 episodes, 30 minutes, and created those characters and then brought them into live action with the actors that you cast. And, like, better establish that world. Now, would everybody have watched it on Disney Plus? Maybe not. But maybe those of us who kind of liked the film, which was largely liked. It just wasn't like, holy shit, you got to see this movie.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of that is because it's all inconsequential, which sucks because Matt Shankman, much like Destin Daniel Cretton, I always mix it up.
Yeah.
Like, was one of those guys that maybe was going to be a new architect, right?
Yeah.
Of the MCU. And that's just not going to happen?
Nope. Well, okay, so, like, that's the thing is that we know too, like, this is where knowing too much affects the way that things work. Like the part of the problem for him was that, like, you know, he comes off of arguably the best TV show or one of the best Marvel properties in a while, with the exception of the ending, with WandaVision, and does
you can argue that the ending is not his choice. No. It's the we've got to create something. It's got to lead into something. So. Yeah.
Well, okay. And then that kind of leads into like what I love about Wonder Man and what they did, which was left him alone, left the creatives alone so that basically, okay. So it's a Marvel spotlight. I don't know if you know that, you remember you saw the first two episodes or three episodes. Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, they left them the fuck alone. Like they totally. And by the end, when you watch the ending and the way that it ends, and there's no end credit sequence, there's something that I think that they don't understand. Like, I think that Feige has lost. He's lost sight of what truly matters. And I think that this kind of shows that because.
Well, it's weird because I feel like in the three episodes I watched, mm-hmm. it feels like the show itself is like it's one of those like Wes Craven's New Nightmare or Scream 3 or like the show itself is commenting on the show and yes. Marvel proper and like only in like little subtle ways, but it's become this thing where it's just talking about itself.
Oh,
and
oh yeah,
She-Hulk kind of did that, but it did it in a like campy way, and people did not enjoy it. Which I still think the biggest problems with She-Hulk is that they just didn't focus on the effect. They're like, oh, nobody will care that it looks terrible. Yeah, and we all cared that it looked terrible. That show was a lot of fun.
It was. The more you go on, the more it does. But I also think that it does this great balance of. So what makes Wonder Man for me really, really special is that it gives you the hand right away and it shows you its hand right away. And it says, like, it's when Trevor and Simon first meet and they meet at a screening of Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
And that's the through line for the movie. Like, that's the reference point. And so, like, the deeper you get into the show, the more it becomes the Midnight Cowboy, these two people, this friendship. Like, dude, I got choked up at the end. Like, that's how much this show lands. Like, there's something that Trevor does in the second to last episode that
when he breaks the card in the third episode, I was just like, man, this is so fucking good. Like, I'm assuming it gets a little bit bigger, but by the third episode, you've really not seen him use his powers. You've seen some of the after effects, mm-hmm. which I know it's supposed to be a superhero thing, but I kind of enjoy that. Like, at some point, you do have to show it. But
yes,
there was a Incredible Hulk run in like the early 2000s, I think. I can't remember who the writer was. It wasn't Peter David. It might have been J. Michael Straczynski. I don't remember. But his first like several issues was this whole thing of like, don't show the monster,
mm-hmm.
like a Jaws kind of thing. Like, yeah. Don't show the Hulk. You would always just see right before and right after. And it like, eventually it did get a little like, okay, well, this has been six issues. We need to see the Hulk. It's a book called The Incredible Hulk. But I like that. For like just a little while, like you've kind of seen like this, his eyes change,
mm-hmm.
and you've seen like the after effects of his kind of rage out. You saw him break the table at his mom's house, stuff like that. And you're building up to that because you start out like at the end of the second first episode into the second episode being told that he's dangerous. and you haven't seen that. But then, like, in the third episode, he shatters that. It's not even a table. It's like a stone, like a island or something.
Yeah, it's like a granite countertop on the island, and it just destroys it. So what's going to be interesting for you is the fourth episode, which actually goes off, it goes off script, and it deals with another story. So, like, you know how, like, it's a very novelistic approach to, like, storytelling, right? Like, where it takes it veers left and it decides to go off of the main story and tell you this side story, but it absolutely has everything to do with the show. And it explains something to you and the reasons why there are certain things that we didn't know about that are coming to light in the show. And I won't ruin it for you, but it's a very interesting show. It's shot in black and white. It's beautiful. It's also heartbreaking, but it's also very enlightening because they're telling a story that gives context to the greater world. And that's also what I like about the show, is that it manages to have this very small story about these two guys trying to do what they love. But it's also contextually a lot larger because it's dealing with, you know, Damage Control, who, like, by the end is very much like a certain agency that we all fucking hate right now. And I'm not going to name them names because I don't want to give them agency. But
it's weird because, like, Damage Control in the books is one of those agencies that, like, you kind of like to see.
Yes.
Like, they're a little...
they're kooky goofy. And... yeah. Yeah. No, dude, this... like, and I, when you see it, you will understand why they dumped it.
It was, sorry, just real quick. It was Bruce Jones that wrote the Hulk run.
Okay.
It was driving me nuts. I could not remember who it was. It was like, what JMS? It was somebody. I had to look it up. Bruce Jones. Anyway, but yeah, Damage Control in the books is not this, like, SHIELD level malevolent, like, we can lock you up kind of organization.
No.
They kind of just clean up the aftermath, which we've seen them before,
yeah,
you know, in the MCU proper, and it's weird that they're now kind of becoming a clandestine thing. And part of the problem is, again, if I thought any of these stories could actually go somewhere, it might be worth, like, really, really exploring and would be more exciting. Not that it's not good. It is really good.
Yeah.
It's hard to get excited because it's like, oh, well, ultimately they're not going to do anything else with this because in 2 years they will have just rebooted the whole fucking thing. So,
yeah. Well, like, so I have a theory about Damage Control and why they're doing what they're doing with them in this show, which will literally translate to X-Men stuff. Because the way that they are posing the recontextualization of Damage Control here is that they are, like you said, a clandestine police force, but also their main thing is to get powered people off the streets.
You can spoil this for me. Uh-huh. Like, I'm asking because I want to know.
Uh-huh.
At some point, do they wind up revealing that Simon is a mutant, or do they explain his powers in some other way?
They explain his powers because he uses them, and Damage Control is able to get readings off of it, and
he's not a mutant in the comics.
No, he's not a mutant. I
wouldn't care if they made him a mutant, but in the comics, he's definitely not a mutant.
No, no. They actually explain, they explain, I will let other people figure out, like, what I mean by this, but they give a comic accurate, there is a certain moment in the last episode where the Damage Control agent that we meet in the third episode, that arrests Trevor, that's his handler, explains that they got test readings back and what specifically, like what has, like, like what the readings have found, and it's a very comic accurate. I had to look it up because it's been so long since I've read anything Wonder Man, and so it was a very comic. It was a very geeky comic accurate depiction of what his powers, what his powers are made of, and what he is able to do. But there's also, like, the thing is with the powers, it's done in a way that never feels like it betrays the street level origins of the show, but also it allows for, like, there are certain moments that it feels very much like the way, and I take this as a compliment to me. This is a compliment, but it's very Unbreakable. Like,
oh, I you get no argument out of me there.
Yeah.
I do. Glass is unfortunately like not the finale
that everybody wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. That universe kind of deserved. I still don't think it's terrible.
No.
I think it's just more, it gets a little too full of itself, but M. Night kind of just became that person.
Yeah.
Unbreakable, I think.
Unbreakable and Splitter.
Yeah.
But Unbreakable, like, there's a Split's moment.
Tough to watch, but.
Yeah.
Because it's so well done, and because McAvoy is delivering, like, fucking 19 excellent performances.
And it's a horror movie. It's a truly disturbing horror movie that only at the end reveals itself to be a part of the Unbreakable universe. And like, it's like one of those things, like, I love that movie just because it reveals itself not right away. It's like the last 30 minutes you go, shit.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I think Glass became like a too much of a strike while the iron is hot kind of thing.
Yes.
And so that story is really, really undercooked. If you have more time to develop it, but it's hard to blame him, like, because Split was a hit and people were kind of like, oh shit, like, you could get the funding then.
Yes.
And so you just got to go, and you didn't have a finished, you didn't have a good enough script to go.
No, but at the same time, you don't do it in 2019. And or 2018 when it was filmed, and you don't get Bruce, you don't get Bruno, unfortunately. So it's kind of like one of those things where you're like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. It works. It's just not as good of a. It's like when you consider how great Unbreakable is, and you consider how great Split is. Glass feels like a lesser ending to two truly great, and maybe that might have. Might change with time.
You're right. So it films in 2018, release in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of 2019, end of 2020, everything's shutting down.
Yep.
By the time you get to 2021, you have what, the strikes and shit. And by the time you would have gotten around to filming that with a probably more solid script, Bruce is, he's done.
He's done. Because,
what, 2022?
Mm-hmm.
He's peaced out, you know?
But, like, I consider this his last movie, right? Glass. And those last 20 minutes, when you see him doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, the last time I watched it, like, it got me emotional because it's like, that's the last time we will ever, like, it may not be a great movie, but it's a hell of an exclamation point at the end of a career, because you don't get anything really else from Bruce other than direct-to-video bullshit. Like, he just becomes that guy who, like, we know, like, he's that direct-to-video guy that's just taking million-dollar paychecks for 3 days of work and accumulating.
I don't think there's a movie after that that got actually released in American theaters.
No, there's none. But it's a hell of a, like, if you really think about it, that's a hell of a way. That is a, like, the saddest thing to me is that Bruce didn't make M. Night his Scorsese, because those two together are fucking magic. Like, he should have been in Signs. Could you imagine him playing the Mel Gibson role in Signs?
Oh my god.
in that fucking moment where he's eating the food and he's telling it, like, there's a world where he does all of M. Night's movies and he has a different fucking career, and it's a beautiful thing.
The end of Bruce's career, like, the only three directors I think he worked with that got good out of him are probably M. Night, Rian Johnson, and Wes Anderson.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, everything else, like, I think Red is a great movie. Red 2 is not, but I think Red is a great movie. But, you know, really, like, if you look at the end of his career, the true standouts are, like, he's great in Glass. Glass is not a great movie.
Yeah.
The Wes Anderson movie, I just drew a blank.
Moonlight Kingdom.
Moonrise
Kingdom. Kingdom, yeah.
And then the Rian Johnson movie, what, in that same, it's Looper.
Looper.
Like, right in the 2012, like, it's right in that area. Mm-hmm. But, it, like, at that same time, he's also doing, he's showing up in The Expendables, he's showing up in G.I. Joe, he's got another Die Hard movie. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For is okay.
Yeah.
It just doesn't touch the first movie.
No, so. That first movie is a very special piece of art, and the second one is just not good. Yeah. It's not good, and like it's weird to think that like Bruce caused him a lot of like good films, because I honestly think that like him, like if he had just been more differential to Knight, that we see him in like Knight's first five films, and it's a different story. Like, if both of them weren't the egotists, I mean, imagine him in Lady in the Water. Like, that movie becomes so much better without
just having him in it. Him instead of Mark Wahlberg. Like,
yeah. Christ. In The Visit.
Whatever the name of that dumbass movie.
Where Wahlberg is like, come on, little plant. Tell me, little plant. Come on. Say hi to your mother for me. Oh my god. That it was Zooey Deschanel. I mean, you get older, you do somebody like Sarah Paulson, and you have something that's like a better, like, man, like, I don't know, like, yeah, like, when I saw, like, I just, like, maybe 2 years ago, I rewatched Glass just to go back to that and just say, it is truly just, it's like one of those things where it's like, it's not a great movie, but it's a good movie, and it's a hell of a way to end of a career, especially considering that nobody's going to remember any of the direct-to-video slop that he did.
Yeah.
But, like, going back to Wonder Man, the powers are shown, and they show how the potential. And that's what I loved so much, is that those last two episodes really don't have him doing anything that's out of the ordinary, but there's two certain specific things that he does that cinematically, it feels like they pull out and they go, this is the larger world. And it's not that they do anything, like I said, it's not out of the ordinary, but it's just this thing where it feels bigger. And they just do it just the right amount. It's a very interesting, thing that they play with the last two episodes. And I think the reason why it lands the way it does for me, and how emotionally resonant the last scene is, and the thing that they do with it, I won't ruin it. There's a specific needle drop that they use, and you can see it.
The needle drops in the show have been
amazing, right?
The music choices, like, very, very, very old school, like a lot of like 50s kind of like poppy stuff.
60s. It, yeah. You know what the show really reminds me of? It reminds me of like this is MCU's answer to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. That's probably a better comp than like the studio. Like I think I texted you like
it's like the
studio with superpowers. Which fucking can you believe? Last year we watched her in the studio stealing scenes from everybody. And we saw her in The Last of Us fucking robbing everybody that she was on screen with there too. And now she's fucking like gone, man.
She's gone. She's just not there. R.I.P. Catherine O'Hara. Like, but you know, went out on top. Like literally, like I was thinking about it. I'm like, you did some of your best work last year. Yeah. Your best work, and you just like it's sad, it's terrible. Like we didn't talk about it, but like my wife fucking cried. Like she like I was at work.
Dude, it knocked the wind out of me, man. Like I pulled it, like I got a notification on my phone and it was for nothing. And I then like it was like just some random Facebook notification. And I'm always just clearing my notifications. And I went to go clear it, and it like I just saw a post, and I was like, "What the fuck, man!" Like it just knocked because, 71 is, but it's not fucking 95, you know?
Yeah,
like it's not like I saw some post that was like she'd had a career resurgence as of late, and I was like, "Excuse me."
As of late, what are you talking about? She never left.
She never fucking left. Yeah. Like, I don't know what planet you're on, but like the studio, 10 episodes last year, 3 episodes of The Last of Us, the Wild Robot in 2024, and Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And Argyle, but I didn't see Argyle, and I know it didn't make a splash, but she was in it. Like she was a voice in Elemental in 2023. In 2022, she was in like some Kids in the Hall stuff and in Central Park, just one episode. But that's an Apple Plus show that not enough people fucking watched.
Mm-hmm.
She was in an animated, I think it was an animated series, Last Kids on Earth. I want to say that was like a Netflix thing.
Yeah.
In 2020. But from 2015 to 2020, she did 80 fucking episodes of Schitt's Creek. In 2019, she was in The Addams Family. She was Grandma Frump. And that movie made money, not because of her, but like she's still funny in it. A Series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix in 2017 and 20. Like, what do you mean fucking lately? Like, she, like, every year you can find something like, oh, like, I've kind of, like, it might have been an episode of 30 Rock, but it's something, like, every fucking year.
You know? Every year. Like, and was in, like literally was in some of the biggest movies ever. Like, I mean, you Home Alone, you know, like Home Alone 2, like, you know, you could say that a Nightmare Before Christmas, but then you have like things like Waiting for Guffman,
Best in Show,
what's the other one? A Mighty Wind. You know, she's in these things. And then also you've got things like, you know, Burton used her in literally everything. You know, she's in like, It Breaks My Heart. Like I can't watch Where the Wild Things Are because it's such a heartbreaking movie, but she's a voice of she's the voice of Judith in Where the Wild Things Are. Like, which is like she's in the animated Frankenweenie. Like she's in Burton
and Guest. Like it seemed like anytime they were doing anything, if she was available, she was going to be in it in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
Like both of those guys. And I mean, there was, she's also one of those people like, okay, I've been watching her my entire life. My entire life.
Yep.
I've been watching her on screen. I knew her as Kevin's mom and Lydia's stepmother, like far before I knew even who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I've ever heard a single negative thing about her.
Never. Like, I mean, I had no, like, I didn't realize that she was in SCTV until I started watching it when it was probably older. In my
like early teens that SCTV, like somebody like grabbed the rights to like re-air it. Probably early days of Comedy Central.
It was early days of the, cause I was in my late teens, early 20s when it started showing constantly. And then they were also releasing it on DVD. And I was like, when I saw it on Comedy Central, I was like, oh, I still have my SCTV DVDs because they'll never really, cause they're video grade garbage. Like, and I don't mean garbage as in like the comedy was garbage, but just the quality was garbage. Like, we've had this conversation offline before where it's like stuff like Barney Miller, you know, you buy it on DVD because it's $20, but also because you know that they're never going to release a Blu-ray of it. Same thing with SCTV. But I mean, I think I have like all seven seasons. Let me look up. It's seven seasons. Yeah, I have all seven seasons. Because I love that show so much, but also she was probably one of the pillars of that show for me. It was like her, Levy, and Candy. Like, Moranis, not so much, even though Moranis was, but it was more like Candy and Levy and O'Hara, you know?
Just the fact that she could do anything. She literally could do anything. Like, Wyatt Earp's not a great movie, but
no.
She plays Allie in it, and... Yep. You know, it's not like, I mean, I guess a lot of comedic actors are like that, where they, when they do this here, The Paper, like,
you know,
she was just so good and could do the like, dramatic thing, but could also do the silly thing, but could also do like just the motherly kind of thing. And then also be a villain, you know? Like, it's just crazy. You know what movie, like, maybe rightfully so, but whatever. I don't know. I enjoyed it. Like, Home Fries. I think Home Fries is kind of an underrated, like, those, like, 90s, like, indie kind of, like, quirky comedy things that just nobody talks about, you know?
And also has a huge ending with an Apache helicopter. I still can't get over how they managed to make that. But also, why? Okay, here's my question about Home Fries. This is the thing that I, even when I was watching it, because I was
a movie in like 15 years.
Okay, because I projected that movie, and every time I watched it, because I was by that point I was a disciple of Wes Anderson, and me and my friends could quote Bottle Rocket. Like, one of the things that we used to say to one another at the, like, before we would leave to one another, one of us, whoever got to it first, would like hold each other by the shoulder, shake them, and go, "They're never gonna catch me. I'm all fucking innocent," because we loved that movie so much. But here's the thing: why do you get Jake Busey to play a brother to Luke Wilson? He's got
a blonde brother with, exactly, you know, a weird face. You could have just gotten that guy.
One of my favorite things, and it's something that I distinctly remember because I just finished a rewatch of it because I have the DVDs of it, is she's in an episode of Tales from the Crypt where she plays like the worst ambulance chasing lawyer that gets stuck in a small town. And of course, like in all things, Tales from the Crypt, like the tables turn on her very quickly. It is a great because she's so good at there's nothing that she couldn't do. I mean, that's the ending point of it.
Orange County is another one of those like late 90s, early 2000s. Well, it was the early 2000s, but
Jack Black and that
like
one.
Quirky, what a fucking cast, man.
Yep.
Like
that one was, Orange County.
Colin Hanks, Jack Black, Catherine O'Hara, Mike White, Lily Tomlin, John Lithgow. Just so many. Chevy Chase, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Chevy Chase. But it's more than made up with for it because at one point you get my favorite part is like the Kevin Kline and Ben Stiller cameos. That more than X's out the and also like Chevy Chase and also Gary Marshall. I mean, fucking Gary Marshall playing Gary Marshall.
It is Jake Kasdan. So
yeah,
the dude fucking knows everybody. So.
Absolutely. Of course you're going to get Kevin Kline when your dad is fucking, your dad like has arguably been like has directed Kevin Kline in arguably his best movies. Right. I always like the fact that I always remember Mike White for writing things like Nacho Libre and being in fucking Orange County. It's funny,
a lot of people are like Mike White as a writer.
Yeah. And
I always forget who he is until I see him. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that guy because he's in like so many things as like this bit part.
Yeah, and he's always playing a creep. But my favorite part is that everybody loves him now because of fucking, like, White Lotus. I could give a shit about White Lotus. Go back to writing the fucking... Because he also wrote Orange County. Go back to starring in these weird-ass co-starring roles. Like in School of Rock. You remember he's his roommate.
Yeah.
That Sarah Silverman bullies into breaking up him and Jack Black. It's just... Harold Ramis in that movie, Rest in Peace, Orange County. God, gets high as they give him.
Harold Ramis scene is so fucking good. I kind of want to watch Orange County now.
Yeah.
anyway, we get off on a tangent because you know losing Catherine O'Hara this week, like that was rough. But yeah, anybody out there if you weren't planning on watching Wonder Man, I'd say even having only watched 3 episodes, change your mind. Like it is, I don't know if it's going to reach Loki level of like goodness. But I definitely think it could be right there with Loki, Hawkeye. And, I have a soft spot in my heart for Agatha.
I think Agatha along with Wanda until the end, if we're doing rankings for me right now, it's Wanda, Wonder Man, Agatha. Like for me, that's the pecking
over
order.
Loki.
Yeah, because I've rewatched Loki and I now have problems with it, and it's probably gonna be doubled down once they go to Doomsday.
Yeah.
There are certain things that it has nothing to do with Kang. Like there's just like I've seen it like it's good. It's right there between there and Agatha. But you know what the thing is my problem is that I think that now I've gotten to the point where I've kind of come back to where I want something to be self-contained and not like if it was just the first season, yes, because that kind of self-contains it to me to where, there's the ending coda, but
well, you said Kang, but it does kind of just leave you like, okay, that this is a good ending that also gives you a like dot, 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 you know, like,
yes,
but there's, you know, something else. Whereas like Loki, but see, I feel that way about Loki season 2, but I understand why a lot of people don't, because it gives Loki like such a, you're like, that can't be how you leave this character, which it's not gonna be, but
no, it isn't. But they needed to put, like, here's the problem is I feel the machinations of MCU too much in season 2, where season 1 felt like, even though there's that ending coda at the end of it, like, you know, like where they meet Kang, like they see Kang and stuff, it still felt like a contained piece of storytelling. And that was my, that's my point, is that I think that what I love so much about Wonder Man is that it does give you an ellipsis, but not so much. It ends like, it really does end like a Tarantino. You know how like Tarantino loves to get out of a movie right at the moment that you, you want more, but you, the more you, you think you about it, you go
feel satisfied.
Yeah, you go, fuck, I want more, but that's what I want from cinema. Cinema, it's a son of a bitch sometimes. That's exactly the way that Wonder Man ends, and like I can't deny the WandaVision, the amount of craft and storytelling verboseness that happens up until those last 15 minutes.
Yeah. If you craft a better ending for that, but it's one of those things where they step in and like, okay, it has to tie into this thing.
Yeah.
But then it just muddles everything. So you don't get a real ending for Wanda.
No.
Like Agatha, I think you need to have seen things, especially WandaVision, to understand Agatha.
Yeah.
But it is such a like unique story that can only, it's like you could only tell this story in this way. WandaVision is also like that up until the ending. Loki maybe less so. But I, you know, those two seasons probably could have been two movies. I don't know. But yeah, I'm glad to know that Wonder Man also gets to that level. Hawkeye is pretty up there for me. I need to rewatch it, but like I had such a good time, and I think Echo has a lot of problems, and I'm not saying it's upper Marvel anything, not even TV.
Mm-hmm.
I do think people slept on that show, and much like Agatha, it's better than everybody gave it credit for.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's, to me personally, Agatha is upper echelon because it ends exactly the way you need it to end. Like, and I think that that's the thing, is that it, like, I need a period or an ellipsis. I don't need a nothing. Like, it just falls off until next season.
That's not going to happen. It's like, you know, they're not going to follow up with these stories.
Yeah.
Because, especially, like you said, we probably know too much. You know, we know what they're getting ready for. And that just leads us to believe that a lot of this shit, they're just not going to follow up on. And it makes it less important in a way, which sucks. Like, we should be able to just enjoy the work, but it's that guard in your heart thing where it's like, I don't want to fall in love with this world and these characters, and it's just like, well, we're never going to visit this again. Like,
yeah,
you're building something, like, keep going, and they're not gonna keep going with a lot of this stuff.
Absolutely, which sucks,
because there's What's bizarre and with this is the things they managed to fuck up. Like, you fucked up Moon Knight.
Yeah.
How do you fuck up Moon Knight?
I don't know. How do you fuck up, like, how do you break Ethan Hawke's streak? How do you do that? Like, how do you let that? He's
so good in that show.
Yeah. How do you let that happen? But also, how do you cast Oscar Isaac? And you just don't like, and again, that's, I, to be perfectly honest, at this point, I look at it as Kevin Feige interference. Like, I see it as Marvel MCU proper interference. It's like, I'm very curious to see, like, I like the fact, like, at first I was very kind of like, oh man, but I'm glad that Berenthal has said, I want a period at the end of my fucking run. And supposedly the Punisher special is supposed to put a period at the end of it.
Like, and I think because he also knows that, like, hey, you're doing all this like soft reboot shit. And I don't want to be stuck in in that, like, am I coming back? Am I not? Like, you don't know what you want to do. And so I'm just going to say goodbye while I can. Like,
exactly.
He didn't get that with the Netflix shit. And now he has a chance to do that. And I mean, I don't blame him.
So. No, I don't either. I'm also like, I think like the thing was that from everything I read was that he was so pissed off about Brand New Day and what they did to his character in Brand New Day, which makes sense. Like, I love the fact that he hates what Punisher has become, and he wants to keep it in this thing of like, this guy's a piece of shit. Like,
that's what he could do in the Netflix was like, like a bad person doing like bad things for the right reasons. And like, but that doesn't justify what he's doing. And now, like, much like the character in the comics, he's seeing that logo and that character used as this like symbol for shit that it shouldn't be.
Exactly.
And you know, all the more reason for him to just like, I don't want, like, I'm gonna say goodbye. So it's gonna be interesting to see. I'm still excited for Brand New Day. I especially like knowing how how great Destin Daniel Cretton like is at moving these stories. And like, it does also, like I said, to start with, make it endlessly frustrating that Marvel was like, wait, no, we're going to get Downey and company and the Russos, and we're going to get the band back together and do this last like world tour, you know, and then maybe we can talk, but we'll give you Spider-Man. Do you want Spider-Man? It's frustrating. So, but anyway, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieisle.com, where we've got a bunch of 4K reviews that we're posting right now on the site, and it'll probably be still there. I mean, of course it's going to be still there. The king, like I reviewed the King of January's newest movie, Jason Statham in Shelter. Where he plays, I mean, you know, these movies, it's literally like he's playing Jason Statham. He's an ex-CIA something or other. He's literally occupying the place that Jean-Claude Van Damme and Steven Seagal used to do. Ex-operators that, or more recently, the Liam Neesons, where he plays a guy with a certain set of skills and he has to protect some young person. And like, you know, they use things like, like, I love that this film is like a bunch of cliches, because like they literally use things like he's a precision weapon. He's off the reservation. Like all of these like stupid cliched things that you used to hear in the 90s when you were a kid and go, man, that's cool. It's like, it's not cool. It's kind of dumb, but it's also very funny because there are a certain sector of person that is going to take this movie deathly serious. Like it's going to be their favorite movie of the year. But it's fun, it's ridiculous, and you get to see, like, you know, you get to see Jason Statham try to do, like, low-grade Keanu Reeves, John Wick stuff, which, you know, is fun in and of itself. So you can read that right now, my review of that. And then, like I said, I've got a bunch of 4K discs reviews coming up, not the least of which is I just got a peek at the Excalibur 4K.
Yeah, I'm thinking about pre-ordering that.
Oh, man. That's the first time that movie has not looked like shit ever. Like, I could actually see stuff on that movie. You remember how, like, it's all fog? Like,
yes.
The 4K is so good that you can actually see the knights in the fog now. And I'm like, oh, man. Like, they really did a number on this one. It's really nice. It's a beautiful 4K. It's got a bunch of special feature, so I'm looking forward to getting to review that. And then movieisle.com,
and we're not recording next week, unfortunately. No. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. I don't know what we're going to be talking about. So.
Well, hopefully talking Raimi and talking this Iron Lung movie, because I mean there ain't nothing else coming out. Wonder
Dracula,
Man.
Luc Besson's Dracula.
Oh my God, Luc Besson, another dude. I mean, but then also we've got, I think we've got, I mean, we didn't even touch on Shrinking, and we'll have a couple of episodes to be able to talk about that. Because I have so many thoughts.
Fucking, that first episode was a gut punch, man. But yes. we'll definitely be talking about Shrinking. So yeah, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
See you guys in 2 weeks.
Number one Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Kal-El, number eight The Simpsons, number nine TV, number ten every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now. Nerds Ruin.